And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. RockNashville.com is your community resource page brought to you by 102.5 The Game and Cromwell Media. Even though we're holed up in our own homes, we'll get through this Nashville like we do everything else together. Go to RockNashville.com to support your local businesses who are supporting you. Joe, we were talking in the last segment, and Corey Curtis from News 2 scheduled to join us here in just a few minutes. We were talking in the last segment about Jadeveon Clowney and just the process that it's been right now in terms of his free agency. Ron from Indiana texts in on the text line and says, I think Clowney will be more productive than Casey would have been and what Beasley will do this year. I think you could certainly make a good argument that the production will be there and he will be more impactful than Casey and Beasley will be. It's just the question of then, okay, how much is that worth and what's the number you're willing to go to?
Okay, so wait, I want to make sure I have the comment right. So more productive than Casey
and Beasley
would have been and
yes,
Beasley
been.
Will be?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're talking about Clowney and Beasley together, or you're talking about he's saying Clowney somewhere else is going to be more productive?
Well, he's saying that Clowney, if the Titans bring Clowney in, then he will be more productive than Casey would have been here in Tennessee and what Vic Beasley will be this year in Tennessee.
Yeah. Well, I think if he comes in, he'll certainly play more than Vic Beasley. You know, I mean, I think Beasley, no matter what, looks like a guy who's probably a situational rusher. I mean, we'll see. Who knows? Maybe this is going to be a big renaissance for him. But I think Clowney, yeah, that's the thing. With Clowney, you have a guy who can come off the edge and be a factor. You can also move in there and play the five tech and be a disruptor in that front three sometimes too, potentially. I mean, he has been moved around like that. So he obviously has more versatility and I think would be certainly a constant factor for this defense.
The Beasley piece continues to just be intriguing to me because I see the upside and I see the potential, and I think in a perfect world, it's a one-year deal for the Titans. Maybe Beasley comes in with a chip on his shoulder. It'll be the first time he's played for a different team in the NFL. Sometimes just a change of scenery really helps from that aspect. I don't have a ton of expectations for him just in terms of what we've seen from him the last two or three years. But the talent is there, and the ability certainly is there. We've seen it. If he can put it together for a year for the Titans and work himself into a big payday after that, I think if you're the Titans, and even if you lose him the year after that, you could probably live with that because that means he's come in and done a really good job and been a difference maker for you on the edge.
Yeah, there was a piece, and I've got to – oh, it was ESPN, I believe, here. Let me make sure I have it right. It was an interesting piece about Beasley over the weekend, and basically the piece was, you know, five signings that could be steals by Seth Walder, and he mentioned Beasley, citing some ESPN stats and info stats. That is, I love all these, you know, all these stats with their acronyms. His PRWR, his pass rush win rate, ranked 15th among qualified rushers last season, one spot below Yannick Ngakoue. Very similar double and a very similar double team rate. A year ago, apparently Beasley ranked fifth, and Ngakoue was 27th. So, hey, there's one metric that says that he wins at a high rate and also is doubled at a high rate. We know that we've heard the other side of this, that you know he's kind of dogged it, and people were down on sort of his effort and development, and obviously that 15.5 sack season, it feels like long ago. That was back when the Falcons were great, which also feels long ago. But, you know, if your PRWR is looking good like that, maybe that tells you that, you know, he's got a chance to do something here. I mean, I think there's some value in these things, and I still think bottom line production is what matters. He did get 8 sacks, and people will come on the other side of that and say, yeah, but 4 of them were late in the year and blah, blah, blah. And we'll see. I mean, this a lot of this has to do with how he views this opportunity, and I do think this is a Mike Vrabel special here. I mean, it's a pass rusher. It's a front seven guy, and we know how much Vrabel loves working with those guys, and so I think Vrabel's a motivator, and if Beasley can be reached and more can be found in him, then I think he's probably in a good spot for that to happen.
I think so too, and that's an interesting point because Vrabel seems to be a guy, and Joe, you would probably know this better than me, that he really connects with the players. I think the players have a lot of respect for him just because a lot of the players at least know of him and know of him playing during his days with the Patriots. They watched him play while they were growing up. Obviously, there's a connection there. I think sometimes with the hands-on approach he plays or he coaches with as well, I think a lot of times people overblow the fact that, you know, Vrabel's out there, he's hitting them with, you know, the sled machine and all this other stuff. But I do think there is a connection there that players know that Vrabel has done it before. He's done it at a high level before. And to your point, I think if Beasley can be reached and he's a guy, you know, who maybe he did have work ethic concerns in Atlanta. I didn't watch him closely enough in Atlanta to identify whether or not the work ethic concerns were an actual thing or not. I do know this, if that is a concern and that continues to happen, that's not going to fly here under Mike Vrabel. It's just not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's, you know, it will be a short stay, and it won't be involving a ton of snaps on the field. I mean, I think that's one thing, you know, Vrabel is constantly preaching, and he preaches it with some force. And they've got a locker room here also that, well, it has changed. And that's where it's interesting because, of course, he comes in as a guy like Casey moves out. I think Wesley Woodyard probably moving out. I don't know about Logan Ryan. That's another – we've been talking about Jadeveon Clowney, but Logan Ryan, it's the same sort of thing, like holding pattern slash price dropping. But pretty good chance, I think, that he's somewhere else. So you don't have as much in the locker room, but you still have, you know, Kevin Byard and really Kenny Vaccaro too, those two safeties. They're leaders. There's still a – oh, man, I try to avoid this word – culture that – you know, that breeds accountability and effort. And so I think it's just hard to imagine anyone's going to come in here and kind of just throw their helmet out there and enjoy any part about playing for this organization. Cause you know, that they've been very good, I think, about not allowing complacency to happen.
Here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick break. We've got Corey Curtis from News 2 going to join us after the break, and we'll get into some Titans conversation with him next. That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning, and it's that time of the week where we bring in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on, my friend? How are you?
Well, I've, you know, learned that valuable lesson. If you don't charge your phone overnight, it doesn't work sometimes.
That's okay. We've all learned that lesson before. I continue to learn it on almost a week-by-week basis. So that's something that I strive to get better at in my own personal life. What have you been up to over the weekend? How much more difficult is it to be filling time on the news covering sports with our current situation?
Well, I mean, yes and no. I mean, look, what's happening in our country in the last 100 years is unprecedented. So, you know, there's plenty to talk about. But as far as my day-to-day job goes, you know, it was always Titans, Predators, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. There's always something to do, something to talk about. And you take that away, and you know, my job is more challenging now. I've got to pivot in a different direction, and all my stories has pretty much be, you know, coronavirus, COVID-19 related. And, you know, so like last night, we don't have Sports Extra right now. Sports Extra is on hiatus for a while. And, you know, we're doing stories about COVID-19. I did a story last night about a neighbor who is, she's an event planner, not an event planner, she's an event decor person and specializes in balloon setup. And she's got no events right now because of social distancing. And so she has been using her entire balloon inventory to decorate houses in the neighborhood to try and raise people's spirits. So, you know, the challenge for me is finding stories in a different direction. I always say, you know, and I'm sure, Joe, you'll agree with this, you know, we call ourselves sports reporters. You know, we're news reporters. Our news is just about sports. And so I just have to find news about different topics. That's all.
Yeah, how are you guys – so obviously I know there's some going in, but obviously you guys are doing a lot of things remotely as well. I mean, how's that working out in terms of just the day-to-day of this?
Well, I mean, they're trying to keep as many people out of the building as they can. So there are I haven't been in the station in a week now, so I can't tell you exactly how many people are in there, but I can tell you this, it's not many. We have as few in there as possible. We have virtually all of our reporters working from home. We have a handful of anchors, you know, working in the building because, you know, we have to plan for every scenario, and one of those scenarios is when somebody in our building tests positive and we have to clean the building and can't be in there. And so we've got, you know, people all working from home, and it is challenging, you know, because there's only so many cameras and so many laptops to go around. I'm working with my laptop at home and with my iPhone. And so, you know, thankfully technology allows us to do these things. If this was 20, 30 years ago, the challenge would be entirely different. But technology now is much more compatible for doing what we need to do.
Corey, we've been talking about Jadeveon Clowney, obviously still unsigned. And, you know, there have been reports out there he's asking for $20 million and teams haven't been willing to come near that number at this point, the injury history that's there as well, and you're not able to get a physical from him in person right now. I mean, there's a whole lot of things going on and surrounding the Jadeveon Clowney situation. If you're the Titans, what's kind of the number that you're comfortable going to when you factor in all of those things and the sack numbers that have been there as well?
Well, look, I like Jadeveon Clowney. I think he would be a good addition to the Tennessee Titans. And I'm sure Jadeveon Clowney likes Jadeveon Clowney, but he is not a $20 million player. I mean, there's nothing in his statistical background that says he is a $20 million a year player at this point. So I wouldn't, you know, if somebody else wants to give him $20 million, high five, go for it, give it to him. You know, I struggle to think that he's, you know, sometimes it's hard to catch up with the numbers mentally, emotionally, and how quickly they've gone up at certain positions. So, you know, I would say if, you know, what is Dante Fowler, like $16 million a year?
Yeah, right.
I mean, so if Dante Fowler is a $16 million a year player, then I'd probably be more comfortable being around $16 million. But I don't know that I could go much higher than that.
Well, let's say it doesn't work out for whatever reason. It's really interesting to see Clowney just sort of sitting there and apparently see the price dropping on him. But let's say it just isn't going to work out. First of all, are you concerned about where the Titans are in their front seven? You know, it's not like Austin Johnson
yes.
was a great player
yes,
here.
I am.
There you go. Yeah. Go with it. How concerned are you?
No, I'm very concerned. I mean, look, Jarrell Casey was a great football player, or is a great football player. And when you look at the Titans' run defense, it has been among the top 10 in the NFL pretty much since Mike Mularkey took over, when they had Dick LeBeau and now they had Dean Pease. Their run defense was always among the best in the league. And now you don't have Jarrell Casey, who perennially played the game about 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And then you've lost Austin Johnson, who I know people don't like because he didn't get sack numbers, but was a quality depth run defender for that team. He was a big anchor who could play snaps for that team and defend the run. Now, we know teams are defending the pass 60 to 70% of the time, so I know that cut down on his snaps. But when it came to shutting down the run, 94 was not a bad body to have on the field. And now you don't have 99 or 94, and you haven't replaced them with anybody. The only replacement you've come up in the pass rush is Vic Beasley, who's kind of an enigma. He's kind of a roll of the dice right now, and he's on a one-year deal. So it says to me either they've got a plan for who's coming in on the defensive line, or they're drafting somebody. Because right now what they have on the defensive line is not enough.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us. And, Corey, obviously Ryan Tannehill has gotten his new deal. But there are still some people out there that are going to look at Tannehill, whether it's locally or from a national standpoint, and say, you know what, yeah, that was a nice 13-game stretch that he put together with the Titans, but it was just a fluke. What does Tannehill need to do to convince people that, number one, it wasn't a fluke, and to justify the new contract this season, in your opinion?
Do it again? I mean, be, you know, you know, in be better in critical situations. You know, I watched the replay of the Chiefs game, and the first Chiefs game when he came back and managed to win, you know, that football game, had a nice run and a nice throw to Adam Humphries to win that football game. But, you know, those playoff numbers aren't going to go away. And it wasn't that he was terrible in the first two games. He didn't have to do much in those first two games. And then I always get back to the third game when in the second half they needed him to carry the team and he couldn't do it. And so, you know, it wasn't like he was outstanding in that game and they lost, you know, despite it. And that, you know, that will leave people wanting. And then the other thing that will always get people, or at least for people like me, is Joe Flacco. You know, Joe Flacco had a great year the year they won the Super Bowl. He has never been anything like that ever again. And so Ryan Tannehill has to prove that wasn't a Joe Flacco year for him. You know, when God, and you remember Jeff Blauser, guys?
Wow, that's a name.
That guy was the greatest contract year player in baseball history. Every year he was up for a contract year, his numbers were just through the roof. And then he would return to Jeff Blauser-like stats. And, you know, Tannehill can't be a Joe Flacco or a Jeff Blauser. He's got to prove that he's this guy every year and that he can take the Titans to the next level. Now, you know, the fair thing for me to say is from what we've seen from him with this team and this offense with this coordinator is it's a match and it works really well. But I think it's fair to question it because he has been around for a while. And we have, you know, he's flashed before, but to see that it's more than a flash and that it's going to be consistent, I think it's fair for people to wonder.
Who knew we'd have Jeff Blauser's shade on the show today? You know, you just never know where we're going to go.
That dude used to smoke heaters in his locker, like, all the time before the game.
When he's with the Cubs?
Yeah, Cubs and Braves.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I sit there and hammer them out.
Nice, nice. Well, I think, look, you make fair points. I think as time goes on with that playoff run last year, because I've heard this from people, I think especially who didn't watch him during the regular season, like, well, he did nothing in the playoffs. Well, I mean, to me, he still had to make a couple critical throws late in the New England game and a red zone throw for a touchdown. He had one really bad throw, too. And, you know, in the Baltimore game to help build that late lead, he made some big throws. I mean, I just never I never felt like the Titans were hiding him in either of those games, you know? It's just how it worked out. You know,
they weren't hiding him, and he did make a couple of big throws. But you don't feel like they didn't win those games because of him. I mean, he didn't carry them to victory in those games. Now, didn't have to. He didn't have to. So it's kind of unfair to lay that on him because he didn't have to, because all he had to do was hand it to 22 and watch him rip through everybody. And that's not his fault, you know, so you can't really be blamed. But, you know, it's people, you know, you give him the money, people are going to want the game in his hands, and now can he do it? And we have to wait and see. Look, he was great last year for the Tennessee Titans to get them to the playoffs. There is no doubt about that. But, you know, if you're asking if it's fair, if people are going to question that kind of going into next season, you know, yeah, there is some room for it to be fair. But it's also fair to say, hey, this guy was really good. He earned his money. He earned his team's trust. And that's what's really important is, you know, I think Stillman asked me on Friday, you know, do I believe that Ryan Tannehill can take the Titans to the Super Bowl? And I said, it doesn't matter what I think. What matters is what the Titans think. And the Titans clearly think he can take them to the Super Bowl. That's the most important thing.
Corey, I look at the secondary right now, and obviously, you know, Malcolm Butler, Adoree Jackson, who knows what's going to happen with Logan Ryan and what needs they address in the draft as well. But I want to ask you about Jackson specifically, because I think once he came back from injury last year, we saw how important having him in the lineup was. But I look at him just purely from an athletic standpoint, and I still think there's probably another level for him to get to in terms of his on-the-field production. How do you evaluate Adoree Jackson and where he is in his career right now?
Yeah, you know, it's tough. You're right, because you always feel like there's a little bit more there with him. And you feel like, you know, there's a maturity process for him that he has to go through to get to be a more consistent football player. Because when he's playing well, he's a good player. And he makes them a better defense because he does have a lot of athletic ability. But when he gets in his own head, you know, it can be a little dicey at times. And so, you know, I don't know if that's just a mental maturation for them, but, you know, again, these are hard decisions. I don't know what the franchise or what the fifth year option is for him. But I'll tell you what, it would be tough to lose two first round picks in 1 year if they don't pick it up.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think he could have his best football ahead of him too. I mean, we'll see,
yeah.
But you know, I really
you would think so.
I think some of last year was almost like a little bit of a glimpse of appreciation for him with him not in and in the lineup, and you see the difference. But we'll see on that. At running back, obviously, we're waiting to see, you know, if the Titans at some point do come to an agreement with Derrick Henry. In the meantime, you know, they're going to have to find, obviously, a backup / third down guy. Is there anyone you like out there? And do you think a guy like Keyshawn Vaughn would be, a good fit here?
Oh, I love Keyshawn Vaughn. I mean, I've been watching Keyshawn Vaughn since he was like a sophomore in high school. And I thought he should have come out after his junior year at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
I mean, he really should. And look, he knows what's most important for him. He wanted to get his degree and do all that. And if that's the most important thing, for good for him. But for football wise, I thought he was ready. And if the Titans, you know, decide to wait to get Keyshawn Vaughn in round, you know, four or five or three or wherever he is going to go, I would have no problem with that pick. But I think there are a bunch of guys that can help them. I'm much more for them drafting the guy to back up Derrick Henry than I am going out in free agency and overspending or reaching on an aging player like Theo Riddick or something. Excuse me. But, yeah, there are some other guys out there. I mean, Akers out of Florida State, you know, might be a round two guy. That would be good. There's a couple of them, you know, that are out there. There's a lot of depth at that position. You just got to find the right match for what you want to do. I don't think it can just be a pure pass catcher. They need to have a guy who can be a three down guy, but that right now they can accentuate on third downs for Derrick Henry. And I think Akers from Florida State and the kid from LSU, Hilaire, he's obviously a good one, but he might be a first-round pick as well. But I think there'll be somebody there around two or three or four that will fit the bill for them. And I would love to see Keyshawn Vaughn in two-tone blue.
Corey Curtis from News 2 has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Corey, thanks so much, man, as always, for taking time to join us this morning. We appreciate it.
Sorry about the battery, guys, but you got some extra time with me.
That's right.
What we love you. We just wanted the extra time with you. Thank you. We appreciate
you. That's what
I thought.
Yeah, bye. All right. Talk to you later.
All right. See you, Corey. Joe, when we come back, I want to get into the Ryan Tannehill discussion a little bit. What's he going to have to do in year two with the Titans to convince people that last season wasn't a fluke? We'll talk about that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Corey Curtis from News 2 joining us here in the last segment on Morning Drive. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic. And Joe, look, I mean, if you're an NFL quarterback, you're always going to have something to prove. I mean, even guys like Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers still talk about all the time in interviews about how they still feel like they have things to prove left in their NFL career. So we get that. That's part of what comes with the quarterback position. But I think there are some people, not as much here locally, but more on a national scale, that look at Ryan Tannehill, they evaluate what he was, or at least what they perceive he was, with the Miami Dolphins, and they look at what he did with the Titans last year, and they say, okay, yeah, that's a great story, and it was really nice and fun to see him do that and watch him play as well as he did in Tennessee, but that's not the real Ryan Tannehill. The Titans shouldn't have given him that long of a contract with that much money. He shouldn't have been the longer-term answer for the Titans at quarterback. What, in your opinion, does Ryan Tannehill have to do to convince people that last season wasn't a fluke? I don't know if, from my perspective, like, I don't know if it necessarily has to be everything as good as it was last year. Like, I don't think he has to throw for the same yards per attempt. Like, I don't think maybe that's not even realistic to expect that out of Ryan Tannehill. But, Joe, what's your opinion of what Tannehill has to do next year to convince people that the Titans made the right decision and that he is the guy moving forward here in Nashville?
Well, first of all, if I was like the general NFL observer, not watching him every week, every snap, I would say the same thing right now, because what I would have seen, I would have watched the two playoff games where he didn't throw the ball too much, and they basically just gave the ball to Derrick Henry and got two huge wins. And again, we just talked about it. He had some big plays in those games, but you could look at that and say, okay, he threw for like 100 yards. And then Corey Curtis is right. You know, in the second half at Kansas City, basically the Chiefs had gotten on a roll to where the Titans had to just play catch-up and really had no margin for error offensively, and they had to go to the air, and they needed Ryan Tannehill to be better than he was. I mean, you can't, like, miss a throw at that point, you know, and have to punt when you're playing that team and what they do to you, what their offense does to you. So if that's all you saw of Ryan Tannehill last year and you knew what he was before, then you're like, yeah, okay, one-year wonder, had some good weeks, but – we know what Tannehill is. I have a different perspective, and I think a lot of people around here do, having watched him, because at some point, you have to see it. And again, it's just this specific team, system, personnel around him, offensive coordinator, and say, this doesn't look fluky to me. This looks real. What does he have to do? I mean, you don't want to have a lot of losses next year where he has subpar performances, you know? I mean, you get into too much of that, and that's exactly what people are going to say. Okay, it was a one-year wonder. He got on a roll. He got himself paid, and now it's back to whatever you thought of him in Miami. No one thought he was an elite quarterback in Miami. Again, maybe some people thought he was an elite quarterback for or on the rise with Adam Gase in 2016 before he hurt his knee. But for the most part, you look back at his Miami tenure, he was okay. He was pretty good. He was decent. That's about it. But again, I think if you're him, you can't think in terms of what we're talking about right now.
Right.
I mean, you know, there's going to be some weeks next year where he probably won't have to do a lot because he has Derrick Henry. And if they keep that balance and if he can keep it to where he's throwing the ball 22 to 25 times a game, I think he's going to have a lot of success.
Yeah, and Joe, you mentioned not having subpar performances. Like, I look at when he took over last year, which was the Chargers game, and then moved on through that. Like, you go down the list and you start looking at some of the games the Titans played and that they won, and like maybe the Panther game, he wasn't all that good in the Carolina Panther game, but really other than that, even in some of the losses, like the Saints game, I thought he was pretty good. Even the Texans game at home, he was okay for the most part. Like, there weren't really many performances he had, if any, last year once he came in where you're just like, ooh, Ryan Tannehill was not good today.
No, and in fact, you know, the game, to kind of counter the whole thing with, you know, he didn't have to do much in the playoffs. I mean, that New Orleans game, you know, Derrick Henry had to sit, and they were right there. If Khalif Raymond doesn't take an illegal shot to the head, which turns into a fumble, I think Tannehill might have led them to the win in that game. And that game didn't mean a ton, but still, he went toe-to-toe with Drew Brees and was really tremendous in that game without Derrick Henry. I mean, you can look at the whole Henry-Tannehill thing either side you want to look at it from, but Derrick Henry's yards per carry skyrocketed when Ryan Tannehill was quarterback. I mean, I think everything worked better. So the passing game fed the running game. Obviously, the running game with this offense feeds the passing game, the play action game and all that. They worked great together. But no, I can't think of, I think Corey's right. The second half at Kansas City was disappointing because at that point, sure, it's like, you've got to, here it is, like, carry the team. And he couldn't do it. He missed a couple throws. Again, that margin for error gets really small. He also had, you think about that game, I think, at least a couple of fourth down throws that he made to move the chains. I think both were to Humphreys, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
You know, he made some, I mean, you know, in the first half when that offense basically just went up and down the field, he was great. In the second half, Kansas City took over. He couldn't keep up. So that's fair. But no, there was not a game last year where I was like, yeah. I mean, early on, I think he had one or two. You know, he had a game at Carolina. They lost the game, and their defense really was bad. It's amazing to think back on that and what the Panthers became from there and the Titans became from there. Yeah. You know, I mean, they lost Malcolm Butler in that game. He, you know, broke his wrist. The Titans couldn't keep up. That was the game, of course, where, like, they, you know, Derrick Henry barely touched the ball in the first half. Like, Tannehill was not great on that day, and they lost. But I still didn't come away from that game thinking he's the problem.
No, and that was compounded the next week because right after that was the Chiefs game where Tannehill basically put the team on his back in the fourth quarter there and won the game. So I do think if you had questions about him after the Panther game, they were at least subsided for a little while with the Chiefs game taking place the next week. Got a text in on the text line that says he just has to pass the eye test. A winning season and everything is all good. A losing season, it just has to not be his fault. I think the expectations may be a little bit more than that with the contract that he signed. I mean, I think if it's a losing season, even if it's not totally his fault, I mean, he's the starting quarterback. He's going to get a fair share of blame if the Titans come out next year and have a losing season. And look, right now, you look at their roster, and look, there's still a long way to go this offseason with some moves that they have to make. But right now, I mean, the Titans, I think, are a significantly weaker team at this point than they were this time a season ago, and especially how they ended the season with the, you know, familiarity they had on the offensive line. Now you've lost Jack Conklin. Dennis Kelly is the replacement there. I mean, Jarrell Casey is gone. Logan Ryan, his future is undetermined at this point. So right now, this team is a ton weaker. So it's very possible that maybe all of these needs don't get fixed this offseason, at least adequately enough, and they come out next year. And maybe they're not quite as good. But even if that's the case, and there are some extenuating circumstances that go along with that, Ryan Tannehill, just from being the quarterback, I think will receive his fair share of blame, whether that's fair or unfair.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And it's not just because he's a quarterback. It's because if they don't replenish some things, and they will, it's one way or the other, they're going to address these things. I don't know if they'll address them effectively or not, but they'll address them. But if they don't do it well enough, and all of a sudden, you know, like Casey goes out and has a great year in Denver, and it's like, okay, so you dump that salary. You know, this guy didn't work out, that guy didn't work out. Bottom line is you're going to look at Tannehill's salary and say, so you paid that guy an awful lot, now you're 8-8? You know, I mean, it's – I mean, right. When you – not only when you're the quarterback, but when you're the quarterback making 30 mil, then if you as a team don't perform – I mean, I guess unless it's like they go 8-8 and he has an unbelievable year and there's other things that are bad. But, again, you can still say, well, gosh – did you have to pay him this much? Why didn't you pay this guy or that guy? A lot of the – it's just the overall bottom line is going to be tied to him, right or wrong. That's how it goes.
Yeah, and look, I watch him play, and with this fit, with this scheme, this offense, having the same familiarity with Arthur Smith heading into his second year here, I have lofty expectations for him. I mean, I saw what this offense looks like when it's clicking, when it's on all cylinders – when Derrick Henry's going, when Tannehill is delivering the ball with accuracy, which he did very well last year. But look, I mean, I don't know exactly if it's going to look the same, if they're going to be as prolific as they were. I mean, you got to think about this, Joe. It wasn't just that Ryan Tannehill came in and played well. Ryan Tannehill came in, and from the time he took over at the quarterback position until they were eliminated in the AFC Championship game, I mean, he played at basically an MVP level. And right or wrong, that's going to be the expectations that some Titans fans are going to place on him based on what he did last year.
Right. And again, if you're making 30 mil, then, and I know 30, yeah. I know, or 29 and a half, we should be fair to him. He's not making 30, but 29. And I know that that number now, and as time goes on, it's going to look more and more like a bargain in the context of quarterback market in the NFL, but still, it's a lot of money, and so you expect a lot from that. And I agree, he was not just good, he was at times great, a lot of times great, and like instantly more decisive and more accurate than Mariota. So you also had the contrast of just how much Mariota was struggling.
Sure.
You also had pass protection that got a lot better for Tannehill than it was for Mariota, but he came out and there was an instant difference. And he just kept building on it. And so you have to think, there's never a guarantee, but you have to think, you know, another year with A.J. Brown, maybe build some more chemistry with Corey Davis, build some more chemistry with Jonnu Smith, who I think is going to have a bigger role and should have a bigger role. And then what you have with Henry, I mean, it's, you would expect this to be one of the best offenses in the NFL next year, which, again, is amazing to say when in October it was one of the worst.
When we come back, Joe, you come out with a really interesting piece on Derrick Henry for The Athletic that I want to get into. Don't call him a running back. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, real quickly before we get to your story on Derrick Henry, got a text in on the text line from Ron in Indiana that says, good morning, guys. Well, it looks like Cam Newton is going to get backup money. I know it's not going to happen, but can you imagine Cam and Derrick Henry in a read option? That is, if Cam is healthy, would be really exciting to see. That would be a heck of a read option. Good luck tackling the two of those guys consistently all game long.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? Man.
Yeah.
Hey, if Cam's willing to take $5 million, you know, bring him in, and he could be like I always forget his name in New Orleans.
Taysom Hill, man.
The guy just because he's like 30 years old? Yeah, he could be the Taysom Hill of Nashville. How about that?
Be awesome. Maybe the Titans will look into that, signing a guy like Cam Newton to come in and talk about a goal line package there. Cam Newton, Derrick Henry, that's a lot of muscle pushing their way up behind the offensive line. Speaking of Derrick Henry, Joe, you come out with an interesting story today on The Athletic talking about Derrick Henry and the negotiations going on between he and the Titans, and specifically the position he plays at the running back position. I want to let you set this up and kind of tell everybody where you were going with this article that they could check out on theathletic.com regarding Derrick Henry and his position and how that's working against him right now.
Yeah, well, first let me start by saying, you know, I'm getting hate texts all morning from Stillman. Jared Stillman is angry about this because Stillman, who of course spends like every day talking about how much he loves Derrick Henry, he's the greatest thing ever in football. But of course now he wants the Titans to just tag him twice, and that's too bad. You're running back. That's the breaks. Get out of here. It's amazing, like the fan. I get frustrated with NFL, not just NFL, with sports fans who seem to side with management so much. You know, like if you really like a particular player, why don't you want that player to get paid? I understand, you know, you want more money to be available for other things, but basically, Robbie, I wrote about Derrick Henry. I've wanted to write this, and obviously, a lot of stuff's been going on. I wanted to write about how he should be paid, okay, and how other running backs should not impact him getting paid. And we've talked about that on the show. And so I tried to get into, you know, some of the comparisons. You know, everybody's making the comparisons, or they're at least using the recent examples of bad running back deals to sort of illustrate why he shouldn't get a good deal. But I wanted to go back, and I also compared him to a couple of former Titans running back deals. One thing that's kind of amazing when you think about it, like, okay, so Eddie George, and I talked to Floyd Reese for this. Floyd is always a great help when you talk about being a GM and comparing eras. And of course, Floyd signed Eddie George to a 6-year, $42 million deal back in 2000. So think about that. So 20 years ago, Robbie, you know, Eddie George's deal was for $3 million less than Derrick Henry's going to make this year on the tag, right?
Yeah.
I mean, crazy. 20 years ago. So, okay, so go back almost 10 years. Now, the other deal on this, and the point with Eddie George is similar size to Henry, way more wear and tear, played at a time when you hit in practice all the time. You played in preseason games. Concussions meant virtually nothing, okay? And you're playing against defenses that are actually built to stop the run, unlike defenses now, or less like defenses now. And Eddie George signed that deal, and he still was productive. Now, Jared, I'm going to go back to my hate text from Jared, said, you know, he stunk after signing the deal. Well, the numbers say he had similar yards per carry, and he exceeded 1,000 yards 3 of the next 4 years. But regardless, that deal was kind of a no-brainer for Floyd, you know, and it's funny because he thought at the time basically he had no leverage because of all Eddie George had done. Now, that wear and tear would be leverage for a team. Just being sitting across the table from someone called a running back would be leverage for a team. And that's part of also what I wrote. Like, just call him something else then. And Le'Veon Bell did this a few years ago. Like, call me a weapon. You know, I'm not a running back. I don't want to be called a running back. So think back almost 10 years to Chris Johnson. That's the cautionary tale. The Titans redid his deal, extended him, and they gave him a 4-year, $53.5 million extension. So again, a decade ago, The Titans running back made $13.35 million. I think that's the number. 13 plus million a year. 3 million more than the running back tag number is now. That right now Derrick Henry's going to get paid. It just shows you the devaluing of the position, and I understand a lot of it. I also think you better be able to look at an individual and what that person is to a particular team and assess value fairly. And so I think the Titans will end up getting a deal with Derrick Henry. And that's part of this, too, is I wanted to kind of get a feel for, is this just like tag him and, hey, you know, tag him again? That's what Stillman says. Just tag him twice and see you later at 28. Or are they genuinely going to work on a deal? I think they're genuinely working on a deal. I feel good about saying that right now. Will they get one? I don't know. Yeah, it's really just the money number. It really is. It's not – I mean, of course it's going to be – a 4 or 5 year deal, and it's going to be very much front loaded, just like Tannehill. You can get out of Tannehill after 2 years. This will be something you could get out of after 2 years. Does anyone out there not think that Derrick Henry will be good for the next 2 years? I mean, why would you think so?
I think he's going to be great.
I mean, the only way that it's not is if he has some devastating injury. Always a possibility in football. But unlike these guys who I think he's getting unfairly compared to, Todd Gurley, Devontae Freeman, David Johnson, they had several serious injuries building up on them. Well, Gurley had the one big one. He came in with a knee. Henry has none of that. He had one hammy last year, missed a game, came back, and was the first back in NFL history to go 183 straight games. Two of them were playoff wins. He dominated those playoff games. Don't tell me just because he's a running back you don't pay the guy. I don't buy that at all. So it's a bit of a rant, you know, 1,600-word rant, but I had to get off my chest.
There's an interesting point you bring up in the article, Joe, talking about what John Robinson said about Derrick Henry at the Combine in Indy. And quote, I mean, he led the league in rushing. He built off the second half of the 2018 season that he had. He cares about his teammates. He works hard. He's great in the community. And we're going to work through that one and do everything we can to keep him around. And Joe, that again, that's a quote from John Robinson. You made a good point after that, I think, to illustrate that was probably John Robinson kind of bracing Derrick Henry for the fact that, hey, we're going to franchise tag you, dude. Just don't be that mad at it. And then the question after that becomes, okay, what are they trying to get him to not be mad about? Don't be mad that we're franchise tagging you. We're still going to work on negotiating a longer-term deal, or don't be mad where you hold out where we're operating under this one-year deal. That's kind of the interesting balance that I think we're trying to figure out right now. I agree, Joe. I think the Titans will and should work on a long-term deal with Derrick Henry. But there is the possibility out there that maybe they're not. Maybe they are operating under Jared Stillman's philosophy, and they're going to tag him this year and see where they go after that.
Well, and again, like I wrote that, I don't believe that's true. I feel very good about saying that's not true. And again, you know, we'll see. We'll see if it comes together. And there's always the possibility of, you know, posturing like you really want to do a deal, but really you're like, oh, the tag sounds pretty good, and 10-3 is you know, fair. I mean, he only made two last year or whatever it was, less than two. But I think it's genuine that they want to make a deal with him, and we'll see. We'll see. I don't know how far apart they are on the number. I think if you're Derrick Henry, you know, everybody remembers the comment he gave, you know, the floor, you know, the Zeke deal, which is 15 a year, is the floor. Then he said that, you know, he kind of misunderstood or whatever. I mean, I think the one thing that's fair on this is the two down back thing. And the reason is because, like, there's some of these teams that have a great back and then they basically just pay someone to be a backup. Well, the Titans actually have to invest in something to make up for that. And I don't think Derrick Henry is going to be a guy who all of a sudden is out there running choice routes and giving you 50 catches a year. That's just not going to be him. It's not who he is. So it is fair to say he's a two-down back. And so either you have to pay a guy like Deion Lewis, which is 4 years, $20 million, or you know, you have to use a draft pick coming up, and I think they probably will, to address that need, to address that absence of something that he doesn't bring. So that's fair. I think, to me, that knocks a couple million off the deal. But my gosh, pay him what the Chris Johnson deal was from a decade ago, and front load it and put the guaranteed money, you know, do everything so that you can get out of it in 2 years when he's 28 and everybody thinks running backs are ancient by then, and in a lot of cases they are. And I think you can still function and build a good team around that, and then you have paid and appreciated someone who deserves it.
Joe, you brought up an interesting point earlier about the loyalty aspect, because I agree. Like, people talk about, you know, the player should be loyal to the team and that sign with the team that's given them the opportunity, all this stuff. A lot of fans say that, and then when a team like trades a player away, there's nothing about loyalty then. They're like, "Oh, we love the deal that they made. Who cares that the team wasn't loyal to the player?" Like, loyalty in professional sports doesn't really exist more times than not. And nor should it exist, I think, if you're a player. You have to make the best deal for yourself, because in most cases, they can trade you at any time they want to. They can cut you at any time they want to. So this is something that's been a pet peeve of mine for years. I hate the stupid loyalty discussion around players when it comes to their contracts.
No, I agree. Now, the other side of that is, okay, well, you got to look at this if you're a team like a business too. And so, like Jared's making this point, just tag him twice. And, you know, his tag number, I think next year would be, I think it's 12. It's definitely above 12. So basically, you're paying him almost $23 million over 2 years. If you went tag, and it's like, hey, you got to run a business, and this is what the market is, and that's fine. It is a business. But there's also something about this whole thing that it's a work environment, too. And so sometimes you got to consider work environment and maximizing employee performance, which sometimes means worrying about employee mindset and happiness. I mean, that's something too, right? I think it's fair that an employee might think, you know, approach a job differently based on how they are treated. So that should be part of this consideration too. Yes, I agree, Robbie. It gets way – the idea that these players, especially in the NFL – should be loyal? Oh, I mean, they are discarded on a moment's notice. A team's got to think business too, but I think it's good business to give Derrick Henry more security than he has right now.
When we come back, we'll continue the NFL discussion. Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.